From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. It's such a pleasure and honor to be talking with you again today from the studios of WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joining me in the studios this morning is my partner, Bob Gould. Bob, welcome home.
Good morning, veterans. What a wonderful day it is here. Boy, did you see all the excitement in town? They got tents. They have
They've got some event going on this evening here in town.
That's right, folks. But the ESPN are going to be on, I think, at 11 o'clock this morning. So, folks, go to ESPN this morning. It's game day. The whole college thing is all centered around where we are, our flagship station right here at WDEO. I'm excited.
I can tell
you. The energy in town. You can't get a coffee, you know, like within 10 miles or something.
No, everything is very busy today. For those of you that are not aware of that, there are other football games going on around the country, but Michigan is playing Notre Dame.
There is
tonight under the lights. I think it's only the second game in the history of Michigan Stadium, so a mere 110,000 people will be wandering around town all day starting now,
and the students.
And so it could get very interesting about midnight when they try to find their cars.
That's right.
Okay. I know. Close enough,
yeah,
to the stadium.
Because you're real close. You're close.
And
he's close,
park
folks.
In my yard, and they will probably come.
Are you selling spots?
No, not this time.
No,
okay. Not this time.
Jane wouldn't like that.
No, probably not. Anyhow, welcome to Veterans Radio. Again, as I mentioned, we've got a really exciting program going, and Bob's got an event coming up, and I'm going to turn it over to him in just a second. But I want to ask you all a question out there. How many of you know what MILFAP means? It's MILPHAP, MILFAP. I'll let you ponder that.
Just a few hands went up.
I know. And so, Bob, there's an event coming up this Sunday, I heard.
Okay. Well, the answer to that will come right after this, right, Dale? You're going to tell them that. Correct. Yes. MILFAP, right? You're going
to
have that.
Yes.
All right.
Have to stay tuned.
Right.
We have to find out what that means.
Here we go. Folks, every week, if we get a little email from you, we'd like to publicize your event right here on Veterans Radio. And when we do local events like the one I'm just about to tell you, sometimes we get emails from people out in Washington State. Hey, what do I want to know about that for? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it might be going on where you're at. And if it's not, then maybe you might want to get a couple folks together and have things like this. Fundraisers. Washtenaw County, VVA, that's Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 310, will have its 11th annual pig roast. Oh, Dale, those piggies are great. Oh, what do you like about it? I love the skin, you know. Woo. Oh, Dale. Hey. Well, I thought you were a Southern boy, man. Oh, anyway, they're having their 11th annual pig roast this coming Sunday. That's right, Sunday, September 8th, noon, right at the noon hour, noon to 4 o'clock. Where do you go? You go to Wagner Road. Yeah, go down Wagner Road south of, what would you say, Dale? South of the
Sile Church.
Sile Church. There you go. And so down on Wagner Road, noon, 11th annual pig roast. And on the line with me, on the program with me, is Don Miller. He's a Navy guy. Sometimes we don't know. Or we don't realize that Navy guys, we're Vietnam guys, right? And that's right, because we always think of Army and Marines and all that. But on with me right now, and I want to give a big Veterans Radio welcome, a member of the VVA Chapter 310. He's putting all this together. Welcome, Don Miller.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Pleasure to be on your radio station.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. Tell us a little bit about some of the projects that your folks do, the VVA Chapter 310, especially the packages to the troops. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, about every 6 weeks here at the VFW Hall, 3230 South Wagner in Ann Arbor, the Vietnam Vets, we put together a packing party, and we invite all kinds of people in from Saline and Ann Arbor and moms. And we about every 6 weeks, we put together these packages, and we send them to all the troops that are in harm's way. And we do a lot of stuff with, you know, putting in the goodie thing, feed, everything. But now we're putting baseball gloves and baseballs in there, so when they have some off time, they can actually enjoy, you know, some really good R&R.
And you do this every 6 weeks?
It's about every 6 weeks, right?
That's fantastic. How many?
And then we
How many do you put together? How many of these packages do you put together?
Well, it ranges, but it's around 30. It's around 30, 34, 35. Sometimes it's a little less. Our big goal, though, if we try to get the parents, the moms in here to help us with where their kids are deployed.
Oh, yeah.
And we just have a great time. And around Christmas time, we bring in the people from Saline, the Saline Fiddlers, and, I mean, there's it's an amazing event. You come out here and you see these people standing up and singing God Bless America. It's
so this money event. That's going to be part of this pig roast, the money that you're going to put together from that, by the way, it's $10 for an adult. The kids are $5 up to age 6. Under age 6 are, of course, free. So, and it is. There's no alcohol there, folks. That's right. And
we have live music. We got live music.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it is a family-friendly event. And looking here at some of the other things you do and the packages, by the way, thank you very much. Every 6 weeks, wow, what a dedication. And also to all the corporations that I'm sure that donate things. You also have Thanksgiving dinner for Don Farm. What is Don Farm?
Don Farms is a recovery center that we've had a lot of vets go through. It's there's a lot of different kinds of substance abuse, and we've had a lot of people go through that system. It's right over on the Stone School Road.
It's a great
program.
Some of this money, folks, that you're going to be there, the $10 food, and I guess you could call that a donation, right? Yeah, the $10 just goes for all these wonderful projects that the Washtenaw County VVA Chapter 310 on Wagner Road, 3230 South Wagner Road. You got to look for the entrance. It's a big gate right there, big gate. And for all you other folks in the country that might want to donate, can they donate online?
Yes, they can donate online. But let's go back to the pig roast just a second, Bob. We also have a huge auction. We have a huge auction. Every year we have an auction, but this year it's really big. The merchants around town have donated a ton of things. So we've got a huge silent auction, and there's also a drawing auction where you put in the dollar.
Okay.
We pull it out. But there is a ton of them. The people around the town are just very supportive of this because our biggest fundraiser, though, not only Don Farms, it's the veterans at Christmas time. Anybody that's in that VA hospital, we get shirts made with flags on them, and they'll say American veteran on the top, and below it'll say freedom is not free, and we provide every one of those veterans that are in the hospital with something to wear.
God bless.
We do underwear parties where that's kind of a crazy word, but you know we provide all these guys and gals.
We had some of those in Ann Arbor, but we won't talk about that. No.
We provide the vets with all this new stuff. So they have clean underwear. We do pizza parties. We do ice cream socials. We're focused towards the vets. Everything we do goes to the vets. We do nothing for ourselves. Everything's for the vets.
Absolutely. Don, this is Dale. I just wanted to let people know that not only is VVA 310 well-known locally, but you are also the National Chapter of the Year Award winner a number of years ago, and this is because of what you guys do. And I want to congratulate you for all of the things that are going on and encourage people to come out for the pig roast tomorrow because you can bring your children out. I know that many of the members have been working so hard over the last couple of weeks to put in a playground.
And that's awesome.
Kids.
You ought to see it. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. I was out there yesterday morning washing the helicopter because,
Folks, it took... It took a day and a half to get the smile off of Dale's face. He just loved washing that thing, man.
It was very... cathartic and probably
to say the least,
and healthy for me to do that. But there's a Huey out there. There's a tank. There's a quarter ton or 2.5 ton truck. There's some artillery.
And the kids can climb on that.
Yeah,
and that's great stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's
tank.
Great. And the other thing about the auctions that Don was talking about is there are some great things. But I was also given a little note yesterday to remind people that they can also buy military insignias and so forth. And especially, evidently, there's quite a bit of Marine memorabilia available for the for Marines because they always need that stuff. And
we actually had a lady donate her entire husband's estate, his Marine collection.
And, wow!
And you know, it would just amaze you. We've got a belt buckle collection. in a walnut, glass walnut case, it's easily, I mean, when you've used to put it together, it would cost you $500. You ought to see some of the stuff that they put together.
Well, we will. I'm going to be there at 11 o'clock tomorrow.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I said to the people, this is really too good to sell. She said, no, we want it sold so that you can help fund your project.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Well, Don Miller, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. One more time, I want to invite everybody, 11th Annual Pig Roast tomorrow, Sunday, at noon at 3230 South Wagner Road. And, Don, you want to say one last quick comment?
Just God bless America. And we thank everybody for their support.
Oh, God, yes. Can't improve on that, Daniel.
Nope, cannot.
And Dale, take it.
All right, and so we're going to be taking our first break, and I asked you a question earlier on, what is MILFAP? Come back after the break, and you'll find out. We've got two guests who served in Vietnam, and were part of that program. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Back here on Veterans Radio.
Man, you know they don't write them like that, eh?
Woo! No, we can understand them.
You want to get up and dance.
We're back here on Veterans Radio, and obviously the music points toward the era. We're going to be talking about Vietnam, and I'll bet most of you out there didn't know that America's veterans in Vietnam spent, many of them spent their entire tour helping the Vietnamese people help themselves. Joining us on Veterans Radio this week are Mike Lewis and Val Poche, if I mispronounce it. Hopefully I didn't. I'm going to make sure I get you guys on the air here. And I said that, you know, I asked their audience what was MILFAP. And MILFAP stands for Military Provincial Health Assistance Program. And let me just give you a little background of the information. It says that the first MILFAP teams went into operation in Vietnam in November 1965. Each team was composed of three physicians, one medical administrative officer, and 12 enlisted technicians. A MILFAP team was assigned to a Vietnamese provincial hospital where its work was under the supervision of the provincial chief of medicine. By early 1966, six teams were functioning in provincial centers, and a decision was made to add 15 teams to the program. The number increased to 8 Army, 7 Navy, 7 Air Force by 1968. And at the end of 1970, teams were assigned to 25 of the 44 provinces in South Vietnam. Joining me right now, and I'm going to bring you on in the order that I heard from you, I got a contact form from Mike Lewis back in December of 2012, and I finally was able to get back with him and connect. Mike, welcome to Veterans Radio. Mike, are you there? Okay, well, Val, are you there?
I am here. Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll go find Mike. I'm not sure where he went. So,
okay.
But anyways, Val Poche, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I found Val the other day as I was looking for information on the MILFAP things, and he set up a website, and he's trying to contact other MILFAP participants. Val, can you tell me a little bit about what the program was and how you were involved?
Certainly. Basically, it was a hearts and minds program of the military. They had, as you mentioned, teams from the Air Force, Army, and Navy. I was one of the Navy teams. We were sent in-country, and we worked with civilian populations. Most of the teams ended up in provincial hospitals. They worked in a provincial hospital, three physicians, the administrative officer, and the rest of the guys that worked in lab, X-ray, and that type of thing. Then a few of us were sent out to various districts to work at the next level down. We worked with the civilian population. We worked with the district health chief, and we trained the health chiefs, and we worked. In my particular district, I had a main maternity and dispensary by today's standards, it was a very simple kind of arrangement. It was an old French building, huge, tall ceilings, four big rooms. And when I first arrived there, of course, coming from a wonderful naval hospital, and then walked into this big room, and the total number of instruments we had to work with was probably the same as you would find in a dissection kit in a high school. And we had no running water. We had very few medicines to work with. So I got in touch with, the first thing I did was get in touch with my church group and asked them to send me soap, and because that was the best medicine we had.
Mm-hmm. It sounds it's just what we were discussing, those packages that the Vietnam veterans are sending back. And where were you stationed in Vietnam, Val?
I was in Sock Tran, which down the southern part of Vietnam, just kind of Vietnam's kind of the inverted California. We're down to the south. You'll see Sock Tran is usually on all the maps. And within, I was in, I was again sent about 6 kilometers south of that, and which is called My Xuyen, M-Y-X-U-Y-E-N.
Okay. You were out in the middle of nowhere. That's where you were.
Well, actually, fortunately for me, and again, I have a hard time when people say Vietnam to me, because my tour was so different from most other people. I lived in the village although I'm Navy, when I was sent out to the village, I was sent to a small Army advisory team there, made up of about eight soldiers. And I walked to work every morning. It was a beautiful day. I'd stop at the market and would buy fruit because we didn't have coffee and donuts in the morning. We had fruit in the morning. And walked to the dispensary, and most days it was a fairly orderly affair. The civilians came, lined up, came for whatever services that were needed, whatever medical services that we could render. On occasion, it was a terrible morning, particularly if there was some sort of firefight that went on and there were civilian casualties, because civilians were the last to be evacuated out, were the last to be treated. If there were casualties, of course, there was, the Americans, and then the Vietnamese took care of the Vietnamese soldiers, mm-hmm. and the civilians were basically left to their own devices. So you never knew when you went to work in the morning, or sometimes even at night, what you were dealing with. And theoretically, we were supposed to be dealing with what you would call your normal sick call kind of situation, and screening patients and forwarding them to the civilian hospital in Sauk Tran. But the only way the civilians could get in there is either walking or if someone had a motorcycle or something to get them into the main hospital. We would end up treating them there in My Xuyen, and we had very little to work with.
Okay, we were talking.
Fortunately, partway through my tour, I ran into some engineers and convinced them to come out to my district, and they put in an artesian well, and of course we got the labor force from the district chief, with the payment of water to his house. So they came in and they put water directly into my dispensary and maternity, and they put water, four fountains in the main village, town square, and, of course, into the district chief's house. So,
well, I think it's important that our listeners, and we're talking right now with Val Pouchet, here about the Military Provincial Health Assistance Program. If you participated in this or you have a question for Val, or Mike's back on the line, I'm going to get to you in just a second, Mike.
Yep.
At 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. And joining us back on the line is Mike Lewis. And, Mike, you are also participated in this program. And I think you guys, when were you in Vietnam, Mike?
I was in Sok Trang from 69 to 70, and as Doc Pochet so eloquently stated, it was a culture shock.
To say the least.
I was a district medical advisor in Long Phu District, and I worked out of Phu Hu Village with a gentleman who spoke a little French and no English, and as Pochet said, we learned the language very rapidly.
Well, you did. Val, when were you in Vietnam?
I was in there in 67.
Okay.
In fact, it was kind of funny. I was with the Fleet Marine Force down in Lejeune when I got my orders, so I started asking people, you know, what's MILFAP, as you mentioned earlier in the show, and no one could tell me. I think ours was the second team to go into this area. So I got a little nervous because they were sending us first to Washington and then to Vietnam, and again, I couldn't find anybody that could, and on my orders just said MILFAP, and no one could tell me what it was. And I started to think that we were dealing with a CIA operation. I didn't know what we were dealing with until I got to the Naval Hospital in Washington. And we had a two-week training. We had 2 weeks of training, and then we were sent to Vietnam and dropped in the middle of Sark Train and went from there.
Well, Val, were you already a corpsman?
I was. I was my third year into the Navy. I had been trained at the Balboa Naval Hospital, and then, as I said, I went with the Fleet Marine Force down in North Carolina.
Okay.
And then shipped out.
And Mike, you came in a little bit later, and it sounds like when I was talking to both of you individually, it sounded like, Mike, that your training was a little bit more involved than Val's was.
Yeah.
You actually learned the language.
I'm sorry?
I said you actually have, at least learned a little of the language.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was an absolute necessity. Because, like I said, this guy spoke just a little bit of French and no English whatsoever. And when I got there, we could count from one to a million, literally, and we knew some of their customs. So it was fish caught bait.
Either one of you, I'm going to stick with you, Mike, for a second. When they took you out to the village where you were, did they just kind of take you out there and drop you off and said, see you in a year?
I was billeted with an Army advisor team.
Okay.
Which made life a little bit easier. We had some security, unlike Doc's. Mostly regional force type troops, which if you really wanted to compare them, they were something similar to our National Guard.
Okay. And Val, I'm going to come back to you. What was the purpose of the MILFAP program?
Well,
as you said, nobody knew what it was, but what was the purpose of it?
Well, the purpose was to train Vietnamese people in how to deliver medicine in general, how to set up a logistics program to get supplies in, basically how to run a medical facility, and at different levels. My level was the first level at the district dispensary, and then the physicians and worked at the hospitals worked with their counterparts, and they would train or attempt to train the physicians. They did surgeries. They did general medicine. In my team, one of our docs was a pediatrician. They tried to help the Vietnamese give a little more modern medical care than was than existed when we first got there. And again, at the Vietnamese, some were very receptive. I worked with a fellow who was very receptive to what we were trying to do, how we were trying to do it. To be fair, the logistics part of it, the ordering of supplies and getting supplies actually delivered, I don't remember in the whole year that I was there that something that we actually put a piece of paper into the system and actually got whatever was requested back in the system. It was always kind of a backdoor system where I would take, I'd go to Saigon and I'd trade something like the Chinese communist rifles that folks used to be able to take them home at one time. So they used to want them for war souvenirs, and they were like gold. So I could go to Saigon and go to the supply depot and pick up medicines, lab supplies, and bring them back. And it kind of defeated, in retrospect, it probably defeated some of the purpose of trying to teach people to order supplies, per se. But it got so bad that we had to actually go to the local pharmacy and buy our drugs, because the local pharmacy was better stocked with black market drugs from the United States than we were in our... in fact, they came out with a new antibiotic when I was in country, and I couldn't get it anywhere through the normal channels, and the local pharmacy had it stocked.
I can relate to that, Val, because we couldn't get flight gloves for whatever reason, and so I had to go down to Saigon and buy them on the black market because they were available. And I just think that we're talking with Mike Lewis and Val Fouchet, who are both corpsmen in the United States Navy and served in the MILFAP program, which is Military Provincial Health Assistance Program. If you've got a question for these gentlemen, give us a call here on Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. Mike, I want to go back to you. You mentioned your training and learning the language, and then here in the States. How did you? I mean, I know you mentioned that you lived with a French, French speaking guy, and then you're trying to speak Vietnamese, and you're trying to get these civilians to come in. I want you to tell me a little bit about how you felt about this program. How important was it, do you think?
I think that it was very important because, number one, it taught our counterparts a better type of medicine, which equated to saved lives, and it didn't matter whether we treated Viet Cong or NVA, and I'm sure that on more than one occasion I got a dirty look from somebody until he found out that I was there to help. I was the second or third person in line in this maternity dispensary in Longfu Village, Fuhu Village, and when these folks came in, most of the time, if it was a female or a kid, I just got a look, and they went on about to see whoever else they needed to see.
Well, I think it's. I need to cut in here, guys. We need to take a break right now.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a little bit. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Sammy Davis is often called the real Forrest Gump. Details after this.
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Davis enlisted in the Army. He volunteered for the artillery because his father had been an artilleryman in World War II and then asked to be sent to Vietnam. In November 1967, his unit was helicoptered into Fire Base Cudgel. Shortly after midnight, Battery C came under heavy mortar attack. At the same time, 1,500 Viet Cong launched an intensive ground assault. Davis's squad was operating a 105-millimeter howitzer that fired 18,000 beehive darts in each shell. When he saw how close the VC were, he took over a machine gun and provided cover for his crew. Convinced they couldn't survive the attack, he rammed a shell into the gun and fired point blank into the enemy. A mortar round exploded nearby, knocking Davis to the ground, but he got up and kept firing the howitzer. When he ran out of beehives, he fired a white phosphorus shell, and then the last round he had, a propaganda shell filled with leaflets. He heard yelling from the other side of the river, and despite the fact that he couldn't swim, paddled across on an air mattress. Other GIs followed him. He found three wounded soldiers, gave them morphine, and provided covering fire as another GI helped one of the wounded across the river. Davis pulled the other two through the water on the air mattress and resumed the fight. Just before dawn, Davis was wounded in the back and buttocks by friendly fire. President Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on November 19, 1968. Footage of LBJ putting the medal around Davis's neck appeared in the movie Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks' head substituted for Davis's. Gump's fictional citation was loosely based on Davis's real one.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me. Let me try with pleasure hands to take it.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, time tripping back in time here to Vietnam. And we've got two Navy corpsmen on. We've got Val Perche and Mike Lewis. And we were just talking a little bit about the MILFAP program. That's the Military Provincial Health Assistance Program. In Vietnam, where these gentlemen were working with Vietnamese doctors and hospitals at the provincial level, and kind of, it sounds like, Val, that you're trying to bring them up to current standards of the time. That's about right.
We were, and I think that was fairly arrogant on our part.
Yeah, I was thinking
we're
the same
trying
thing.
To make right. We're trying to make Mass General out of a small clinic, and it, you really needed to appreciate what the local customs were and
what was feasible, and I always felt what was going to happen when I left. I was always thinking, you know, what's going to happen when I leave? Are they going to, you know, is this going, were they going to be able to maintain this? We had many, well, not many, but we had several politicians that came through or made edicts to be based on what they saw. For instance, if they saw, you know, they would see several patients in a bed and they'd say, oh, my God, you've got three or four patients in one bed or two patients in a bed. And it wasn't patients. It was a patient and family because, you know, we don't have the nursing care that, you know, that you have at any hospital or that you would go to in the United States, even then. So you had to deal with the local customs. And the family came in, took care of the patient, fed the patients, and often they were in the beds with the patients, or the patients would be on the floor, and they'd say, oh, my God, the patient's on the floor. You know, how terrible is this? And, you know, we didn't have air conditioning, and the patients, if you got to visit, as I did, many of the local villages and actually went to their homes, they slept on the floor. I mean, that was a, you know, that was a standard operating procedure, and it was what they were most comfortable with. Now, if you did have a wound that you were trying to treat, I mean, you wanted him in a bed, and occasionally, you know, you tried to separate them. And I handled my nursing situation. I had one of the highest survival rates for my patients because I taught at the local high school, and I convinced several of the young ladies at the high school to come in and become part of the nursing program that I had established at my dispensary. And so we did have some decent nursing care. So the main concern was infection and keeping wounds clean. It was I have no idea, you know, what happened years later. I think I know, but I'd always hoped that, you know, that when I left that it would be able to continue on, and I'm not sure that that's the case. Dale, if I might, I would just like to in remembrance of one of our team members, a guy named Ralph Hale, was killed. He was one of the members of Team 6, and he was killed in December of 67. He, too, was sent out to a village like mine, but his was not quite as secure, and they had to come in by boat when they decided to come into Sauk Train to pick up supplies. And unfortunately, he was ambushed out there and was killed. So if I thank you for allowing me to say a hello to him.
That's fine, Val. Just for our civilian audience out there, you were down in Sauk Trang, which is what they called Four Corps at the time, and that was a real bee's nest of Viet Cong activity. And I know a lot of pilots that I went to flight school with and so forth were working down in that area, and they said it was always very dangerous. And we had a Navy crew chief on our program a couple of years ago, and he was shot when they were patrolling the rivers and the canals down there. So we know it's a very dangerous area, and that's I was going to ask each of you. Mike, I'm going to go back to you. What was your most frightening experience that you can remember?
Seriously? yeah. It was flying over from San Francisco on an Airlift International aircraft, DC-8B, and landing in Tansen Ute. We had heard all of these rumors about how dangerous Saigon was, and we were all expecting the worst.
Mike, I can totally relate to that because I thought I arrived in 1969 also, and my greatest fear was getting shot as soon as I got off the airplane.
And, yeah.
It's one of those things where I stuck my head out the corner of the door and went, I don't think I belong here. Can I go home now? And unfortunately, they didn't agree with me, but it's okay. It worked out. But I can certainly, that anticipation of just going there, especially for those of us who were around at the time, all the news was showing what was happening in Vietnam, and none of it was good. And I just want to tell both of you how much I admire the work that you did, being out there and, you know, trying to win the hearts and minds and letting people know that we are there to help. We're not there just to destroy their country. And I think that that's an important lesson that, that our audience needs to know, that there were, in addition to the, you know, the MILFAP teams like you guys, there were other aid teams all over the country trying to help. And Val, you pointed this out, probably arrogantly, you know, you need to grow food this way or you need to do it this way. And, you know, we tried. That's all I can say.
Yeah. No, I, it, again, we had, they had, they came up with a program where we, they actually gave us cash money to infuse the local economy, and just like they're doing in the United States today, to do improvements to our facilities. For instance, putting painting, getting painting done, getting putting roofing on the maternity and the dispensary. But they gave us so much money. They expected us to pay the local folks almost the equivalent of what a union worker would get here in the United States at the time. And I kept saying, this is going to destroy the local economy. So I went and dealt with the folks and paid them basically a little better, but basically what they would expect to earn if they actually were working within the Vietnamese community. And it worked fine because, you know, but I had all this money left over, typical of a government program where, you know, I had a lot of money left over, and I ended up bringing it back to Saigon and saying, you know, I can't spend it all.
Sorry, I can't spend all that money here. It sounds like a similar program. We've talked to a number of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who are in similar types of programs, and they were told to, you know, go out and spread this money around, and you know, it doesn't work because suddenly they're going from making, you know, 10 cents an hour to $10 an hour, right. and it's just going to mess up the whole thing. Mike, Mike, you told us you didn't want to get off the airplane. I understand that. Val, what would be your most frightening experience?
Well, my tour was coming to an end, and I was at Tontonut Airport waiting for the USAID plane to come pick me up and bring me back to, down at the SOC training airport, waiting for a USAID plane to pick me up and take me up to the Tontonut to get me out of, to bring me back to Saigon. And one of the folks that I had made friends with was a C-47 pilot, and he said, hey, Doc, I'm going up to Saigon. I'll give you a ride. He says, I just have to make one stop. He says, on the way up, he says, and I'll bring you up. Hey, I said, great. So so what could possibly go wrong? Well, the one stop was for this special forces camp in the middle of nowhere. Now, no one knows I'm on this plane. We land at this little dirt strip, and as we come to a stop, the one of the wheels falls into a sinkhole. So now they're unloading the supplies. We call Air Sea Rescue to come out and inflate their big balloons to blow to push the wing up and pull the wheel out of the hole. And, of course, they're on the radio, they're telling us, hey, the VHC know you're here. They would love to come and blow this plane up. And so they're working like the devil, and they finally get the boards under the wheel, and the the pilot says, well, Doc, he says, I don't know what you're doing. He says, but I'm going to try to get this out of here. He says, well, I'm not staying here. And we're flying out of the dirt strip, and again, anybody that's been inside one of those planes knows that it's very thin walls, and we're being shot at. Holes are going through the plane as we're taking off, and I'm saying, oh my God, I made it through all of the whole year, and here I am, you know, taking a free ride, and here's what it's going to cost me. But we did get out of there unscratched. Well, a few holes in the plane, but. We then made the rest of the flight, and I ended up in Saigon and was able to get back
Well, I'm glad that you were able to make it home. You know, it goes back to the thing, there is no such thing as a free lunch anywhere.
You got that right.
Right. We'll be right back. We're going to take another one more break, and when we come back, I want to talk to both of you, you know, about how you feel the program went as far as successful or not successful, and of course, what you've done since then. And so, everybody out there, you give us a call here at 877-573-7825. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Back on Veterans Radio. For those of you that have been listening over the last 10 years, you know what my favorite songs from that era are, I guess, because it seems like I use them for bumps all the time. We're talking with Mike Lewis and Val Pache, both corpsmen in the Navy during the Vietnam War, and they both participated in the MILFAP program, which was Military Provincial Health Assistance Program. And I was reading something while I was researching for the program about a directive I got online. You know, the internet is wonderful. From the Military Assistance Command Vietnam, and the idea was to set up this MILFAP program, and it said the purpose was to establish policies and procedures for military participation in the Provincial Health Assistance Program. And it said providing direct medical care and health services to Vietnamese civilians and working with the Vietnamese medical and health care. I didn't know about this program, obviously, when I was there. Val, how successful do you think you were?
I'm not sure how one could measure that. I felt personally when I left that I had done all that was that I could have possibly done. I got water, running water, so that we could take care of our civilian patients. We improved the trained. I put in a lab, our own laboratory. We had our own small lab, so we could do our labs right there. Trained someone to do the labs. But I don't, and again, because of the way the war ended, there's no way to know that, you know, that what happened. I'm sure that, you know, what I fear, of course, because I worked with some wonderful, wonderful people in the Vietnamese there. I was basically adopted by a Vietnamese captain and his family, and they taught me the traditions. They taught we would the captain and I would sit down in the evening, and we would talk about history and talk about dreams. And but because they were so closely tied to Americans, my fear is that something bad probably ended up happening to many of those people that work with us. So when we were there, I think that we provided a service and we saved lives. We made children healthy by going out and giving vaccinations. And some of those children are alive today because of what we did. I have no doubt of that. Overall, I don't think there's a real measure of what we did that we can talk about today.
No, but I think it's important that, you know, that you feel that you were successful. Mike, how about you?
Well, I think in one aspect, we did win the hearts and minds of the civilian populace.
Mm-hmm.
We did provide a needed service, but like Val, beyond that, I'm not too sure. Since the way the war ended, those folks that we trained were probably put into re-education camps. And I can
tell that this is an emotional thing for both of you, and it's always an emotional thing, it seems like, for all Vietnam veterans when we try to think about what happened. To the friendships that we, you know, that we formed while we were there with the locals, and how the war ended, you know, not the way we had thought it would.
No.
But I wanted to just tell both of you that the Vietnamese people that I've talked to here back in the States, and here on Veterans Radio, we get emails from people in Vietnam. It's amazing reach it seems that we do have, and they always thank us for our service there. And in fact, one woman sent us an email saying, thank you for giving us a taste of democracy for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was such a powerful statement from that woman. And,
yes,
you know, that's what we did. We tried to do the best that we could. You know, we didn't have anything to do with the politics of what was happening there. And we just did what we thought was the right thing. And I have to remind our audience that, you know, you guys were out there by yourselves living in a village in the middle of nowhere. You think, you know, we have middle of nowhere out in Nebraska. You haven't been anywhere until you've been out in the middle of somewhere down in the Delta. And I just think it's amazing. And, Mike, I just wanted to – I thought this was rather ironic when you sent me your bio, is that you were on the Enterprise at the end of the Vietnam War and participated in the Operation Frequent Wind.
Yeah, I was aboard the Enterprise, and
how did that feel?
I'm sorry.
How did that feel to you after, you know, spending a year there earlier?
Well, as Yogi Berra was fond of saying, it's deja vu all over again.
That's true.
I had a lot of young kids that didn't know diddly squat on board the Enterprise, that 5,000 man ship, and I said words to the effect that this is what it was like, only you're offshore, I was on land.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the middle of that. All those helos being tossed overboard because they were useless anymore. They'd been worn out.
Right.
They were past their prime. And the folks that we did see were very appreciative of everything that we had done.
I can't get over that. I mean, you know, we did a good job. And I think that we have to pat ourselves a little bit on the back occasionally, since other people seem to forget about it, and say, you know, we did what we were told, and we did it well, and we did it ethically, and we did it morally, and that's what I think is important, and that's what I want the two of you guys to remember. Val, I wanted to talk to you just briefly about your website. You decided that, hey, it's time for these MILFAP people to find out where they are. So could you tell people a little bit about that?
Yes, I should maintain it. I'm going to definitely maintain it be a little more acutely aware of who's coming. I put it out there because, again, as you mentioned, there were so few teams, so it's a very small group of people compared to many other organizations that have all sorts of reunions and contacts. And I've been working. Each time I get a contact, find someone like I've talked to Mike several times. We've emailed each other, and actually we do have another, it turns out now that I just heard that story, that we do have another point of interest, and that is
In my 4 years in the Navy, I spent one day on a ship, and it happened to be the Enterprise. So I was flown onto the Enterprise, did a medical inspection, and flew off the Enterprise the next day. And that was my Vietnam was considered my sea duty. So, but I that was the only time on a ship in the Navy was that was the Enterprise that one day.
So where do these MILFAP people find you?
They can, again, go to the website. They can call. There's a phone number there. They can call me directly. There's a, my email address is there. They can write to me via that email address, vpoche@aol.com. I would dearly love to hear from as many as we can. I'm trying. What I would like to do is I'm just starting putting together a book on our time in Vietnam and about the MILFAP organization and about the people. And basically, I want to ask the same question of how they felt about the Hearts and Minds program. Mm-hmm. They, of course, we were never told we were a Hearts and Minds program, but I'm not sure how that would have influenced what we did or how we did it, but. There are several books on Vietnam. There's a couple of books on people who were MILFAP people who wrote the books. But those books are all basically the perspective of one person and how they felt about their team members and how they felt about being in country and how they felt about working with their counterparts. And that's important. But I would really love to get about 12 or 15 different perspectives, if they are, in fact, different, and get put together a book. Each person gets in their, basically their own chapter and telling their own story. So I tried, as soon as I talked to one person, one MILFAP member, I asked them to, you know, if they know anybody else, and It's a slow process, but because it's such a small group of people, and a lot of people, you know, get out of the service and had basically forgotten. I don't think they ever forget, but
well, some of them like to disappear, and you know, we can understand that too. Again, what was your website's address?
I'm sorry, I lost you there. For
That's okay, Val. What was your website's address?
Oh,
it's MILFAP.
Did my battery die?
No, I can hear you. Well, we'll just monitor this for a second. I believe it's MILFAP.com, but I'm going to look it up here.
How do you spell that?
That's M-I-L. Here we go again. M-I-L-P-H-A-P.com. And Val was on. I'm hoping we didn't lose him. But
yep, no, he's back.
Okay.
His phone just died.
All right. So that's MILFAP.com, or is it MILFAP6.com?
MILFAP.com.
Okay, and you were a member of Team 6, as was Mike.
Yeah.
And then, yes. Mike, you said they changed your name. And you guys live near each other, right? Oh, my gosh. We only have a minute to go. I got to start paying attention here. anyway, both of you live near each other, about out in the northeastern part of the country, and we want to thank both of you for being on Veterans Radio. And Mike and Val, I look forward to talking to you again, adding you to our mailing list, and I'll see if I can find some MILFAP people in the Midwest for you.
I would really appreciate
that. Thank you so
much for
having us.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah.
It was our pleasure to have them on the program this week, and I wanted to talk to our audience for a second and say, if you've got a story or you've got somebody that you think that would like to be on Veterans Radio to tell their story, let us know. Go to our website, click on Contact Us, and we'll be more than happy to do that. And we will be back next week. Don't forget the pig roast on Sunday. For those of you in the local area, we'll be down there from 12 to 4. Until then, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.